to Let's Talk TriDelta, a podcast brought to you by TriDelta. In this podcast, we can dive deeper into some of the most powerful stories from our award-winning magazine, The Trident, and we can get up close and personal with some of our brave, bold, and kind members. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's talk TriDelta.
Welcome to Let's Talk TriDelta. I am Mindy Tucker, TriDelta's Vice President of Marketing and Communications and the Managing Editor of TriDelta's award-winning magazine, The Trident. We are talking generations and the many different generations that exist within TriDelta, from Generation Z all the way to the greatest generation. And I'm happy to welcome our first guest, Britt Katz. Welcome to our podcast.
I'm very honored to be reintroduced to many Delta alumni and students with whom I've worked over the last 36 years.
Awesome. So you do have an interesting history in the collegiate world. You are currently the Vice President and Senior Dean for Student Life at MillSAPS.
Yes, but where I've worked for the last 16 years.
Okay,
yes.
But you've been everywhere in the Southeast. You've seen it all. Emory, Mississippi State. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up here.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I want to commend Delta for entering the world of podcasts because we're talking about Generation Z. And most young women are going to seek out their news through social media and related links, including podcasts. Our generation, the baby boomers, and prior to that, the greatest generation, would see this as a radio broadcast. And some still aren't introduced to the notion of a podcast. So this is the newest form of communications, and there will be changes in the future. But today, we're celebrating what a podcast can do to broadcast the best of Delta information and sets the stage for the future trends that will confront the fraternity and its incoming members and families. I started my career in 1982 at Mississippi State University, the home of an award-winning Tri-Delta chapter.
This is where I'm supposed to say Hail State.
Well, I think so. In fact, perhaps you can edit this version later and insert the fight song. Then I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, where another large Tri-Delta chapter exists. My career went to the University of Louisiana at Monroe, where I worked with fraternities and sororities, but without Tri-Delta. Morphed then to Emory University, where there's a very large Delta cadre, and then currently MillSAPS College, where I'm wrapping up my 16th year with the award-winning Gamma Zeta chapter at MillSAPS. So now, as I prepare to conclude a career at MillSAPS but continue in higher education, one of my areas of great interest is to perpetuate the best in fraternity and sorority life in American higher education. I believe that there is a strong place for TriDelta in helping cultivate the needs, both professional and personal, for future women in America and internationally. And we must do what we can to protect the best interests of award-winning groups, including my appearance here today. I hope that I'll play some small part in preparing those attendees to my sessions for the future of the collegiate organizations, the alumni, and the national headquarters.
Yeah, so I should mention, we are at our volunteer leadership conference here in Dallas, Texas. You are going to be leading a workshop today on different generations and Generation Z in specific and how they work on college campuses. So why don't we jump into that? Generation Z, I have two kids. They're 8 and 11. I am raising Generation Z, as are many of our members. Who are these kids?
Well, we're very proud of all our generations, but Generation Z is upending American higher education because of its understanding and use of technology. Now, I will be speaking in generalizations. Any listener will frame this within the context of their own values development, where they were between the ages of 7 and 12. And so they will think of the many exceptions they can to my generalizations. But if we'll remember that I'm speaking in a generalized context, I hope it'll help women and men process the information I'm sharing. But let's think, generally speaking, of Generation Z as having had most forms of communication from cradle to college. There's the first potential disconnect for advisors to collegiate chapters with their collegiate members. We are a generation that communicates through email and Facebook. My current Generation Z students do not like email at all and don't ever use Facebook. So if you could easily reach the wrong conclusion about Generation Z being disengaged or disinterested in communicating with me. No, they're very, very interested. They simply want me to communicate with them in the media with which they're familiar and prefer to communicate. So we want to overcome that issue. It's also a generation that suffers from the most significant degrees of stress, anxiety, and depression that we have ever registered in an American generation in higher education. Now think about that statement, how profound that is, that we're talking about a group of women who have so much at their disposal in terms of that technology. And ironically, the research is beginning to show us nationally that that technology is contributing to the exaggerated sense of stress that the generation feels in its life.
Right.
The ironies are evident, but that's where the sorority can come in and play a role, because human connection, relationships, developing a sense of self, despite the prevalence of the technology that too frequently reminds women and men, you're inadequate, you're deficient, we're going to write mean things about you and post them anonymously, which of course is an act of, is craven an act, but nonetheless, it has impact on a very young psyche. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you were about to say something.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up. Just this weekend, we have announced that our new mental health initiative behind Happy Faces is now going to be offered to all 141 of our collegiate chapters. And so we know all too well that they need this, and that college campuses aren't always prepared, or aren't prepared at this moment, for the degree of mental health issues that come with this generation onto college campuses.
Well, first, I commend the fraternity for having seen that this trend is not only present, but that it will deepen. I'm sorry to report to you that the incidence of depression, anxiety, related disorders is going to continue to increase. The numbers of women coming to campus on a prescription medication or suffering from this type of concern is almost 1 in 5. And we expect that number to continue. Now, on our other related note, I'm grateful for the supplemental assistance provided by the National Fraternity nationwide, because the greatest source of budget increase to divisions of student affairs nationwide is in the area of mental and physical health. Health centers and counseling centers are continuing drains on the overall budget of student affairs as we invest more and more in those areas, but have to sacrifice other areas of student development to make certain that we keep pace with the demand right. for therapists, nurses, physicians, psychiatrists, and the latest area of development for student affairs, social workers. When I entered the field 37 years ago, we didn't need social workers, or we had a need, but it was for a much smaller group of students. Now, the demand insists upon the presence of a licensed, certified social worker in our midst, because students are bringing intersectionalized issues. You may be a Tri-Delta who is a young woman of color who is struggling with minority sexual orientation, who may or may not have a learning disability that's profound and that creates learning differences inside and outside the classroom, that she may suffer from some type of body dysmorphia, which causes her, despite being only a size 3, being told by the world through all these social media that that's still too large, in a world where the average American woman is size double digits, 12 to 14. It's a very pressure-packed existence right. for our women. So creating Behind Happy Faces is a move not just for the present, it's a move toward a healthier, happier Tri-Delta future. And I congratulate the fraternity for having created that world for future young women.
Thank you. It sounds like we are partners. The two of us, the college campus and the sorority, can work together to address some of these issues. And you talked about them really needing a place where they can find belonging and welcoming and sisterhood. Yet at the same time, I've also heard that this generation, Generation Z, is less likely to join those kinds of groups. So how do we let them know that this is available? How do we sort of get them to consider this, even though it feels like a different notion to them, but could be very beneficial to them?
Well, certainly Tri-Delta's influence is nationwide. And I had breakfast this morning with a young, talented professional of color. In one area alone, the area of demographic change, we must be prepared as a world of fraternity and sorority leaders. As soon as 2050, the world of European American, which is also known as Caucasian, also known as white women, will have decreased to only 50% of the general population. Are we prepared for intercultural competency that allows us to talk the language, speak to the culture, embrace the origin of the woman who's seeking membership? I had a recent moment in which I wanted to applaud my panhellenic leaders. I love these women for all the good they do, and they hit the right notes most of the time. But in one particular instance, they walked up to me and they were so proud of publications they were sending to all incoming women and their families to say, you need to go through membership recruitment. We want you. And the publications were glamorous looking, glossy and professional. And on the cover were 12 of the most gorgeous white women I'd ever seen. And I was grateful for that. I didn't have the heart at that moment. They were seeking my approval. I didn't have the heart at that moment to tell them, you've just shared with 30% of your student body that is of color or that may have a different cultural origin than you, that you're not welcome. The message is not there, but the implicit notion is I don't see myself in these images, so I don't think that I'm going to apply.
Right. I think we do a lot of work around inclusion, diversity. How can we make everyone feel welcome? And it is an effort and it's something you have to be really intentional and diligent about. So I appreciate you bringing that up as part of this, because I think it's important for all of us in alumni chapters and collegiate chapters to hear that and be reminded of that on a regular basis. So we just graduated our first alumni class of Generation Z. So they are now out in our alumni chapters and in the workforce. What advice would you have as an employer for these women coming in who are part of Generation Z as a supervisor or working with these women? What are they going to look like in the workplace? What do we need to know about managing them?
Well, I think that I would ask new members of Generation Z in the workplace to present to my entire staff 30-minute workshops on what the world likes of them through technology, leadership, appreciation. I would also focus, because of my own needs, on intercultural competency. The world of the microaggression is raising its unfortunate and unattractive head in chapter meetings, in alumni gatherings, and certainly in administrative settings. The first thing I do in trying to build a team as a vice president dean is make certain that the composition reflects the demographic composition of my student body.
Right.
I think that we are well-intended, but misinformed if we think that a young student of color will look at an all-white administrative team and think that she or he is going to be understood when they enter the office. It's they like us, they want the connection to be there, but the notion that I, as a Southern white Protestant, would understand where a young African-American woman has come from does not connect in most instances. I show up at most of my intercultural events, heck, I help create them so that my students can feel connected to their administration and their college. But in a group as intimate as a woman's fraternity, we have to go much deeper to train women and men in intercultural competency so that microaggressions are diminished. They'll never cease to exist because we're working with an 18 to 24-year-old man or woman whose understanding of the world and its nuance is so limited.
Can you, for our listeners that aren't trained in all this vernacular and
forgive
all these
me
words,
using jargon,
that's
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
No, hey, let's dig into it. How would you define microaggression for our members that are listening?
Microaggression would be, for example, a chapter of 70 women, and you may have two African-American women in a sea of European-American or white women. And the president, well-intended, says, you know, we need more of a Black perspective. Jane, what do you think about this? We don't know that Jane necessarily wants to be called upon to represent all Black women. And to call her out without her being engaged beforehand to say, can we call upon you to help us be interculturally sensitive? We risk the notion of being interculturally insensitive and or having perpetrated a microaggression by calling out one of only two young women of color in an entire organization when she's both unprepared and affronted that you would simply seek out her opinion because she is a woman of color. Another example of well-intended but unfortunate circumstance would be to learn that one of your undergraduate sisters is now a lesbian or bisexual. And you walk up and say, you know, I love you anyway. Why can't we just say, I love you? You know, thank you for sharing that honor with me. But as soon as we add the word, I love you anyway, or, oh, I'm so glad to know that because I've got a couple of friends who are lesbian. They're cool. There's a condition now that's been applied. You know, I mean, I have two lesbian friends. So I accept you. We just need to be reminded of unconditional love and acceptance because we share the pen, share the handshake, the ritual, the bond. But we add on these things that sort of are a defense mechanism when they're not necessary. And women and men in the intercultural communities pick up on all those unfortunate cues. So those are two examples. Another example would be for a woman with a permanent and physical disability. There is a culture for persons with disabilities, and we wish to acknowledge that. So making certain that the chapter room or lodge can accommodate a woman or person in a wheelchair, that our meetings are established in such a way that a woman with a hearing difference is given opportunity to sit where she needs to be to best engage in the learning environment of the chapter meeting or the chapter function, that a member who has a visual impairment is given the means and the support up front to know, we're ready, we're ready, we love you, and we're so glad you're going to teach us a lot, but let us know, talking to you, what we can do to help make the chapter more meaningful and experience.
That's helpful. I think that's really helpful. Those are good practical examples and solutions to that issue, and I think it'll help our members.
And we shouldn't be so careful as to not say anything for fear that we're going to be misinterpreted and judged. I create microaggressions weekly. I'm certain that I do, but I apologize quickly with sincerity and impactfully, and ask the person who is affronted or offended, how could I have done that differently or better for our relationship going forward? What should I have said that might have made you feel more included and less judged, and certainly diminished by me?
I think that's helpful. I think you do get scared. You don't want to say anything for fear of saying something wrong, and not saying anything is wrong too. So I think it's helpful to understand we're all going to make these mistakes, but if we dig in and communicate, we can get there.
Yeah, I think that we all need to talk about race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, faith tradition or lack of same, international origin or heritage, our cultural communities, our choice of languages, and yes, permanent and temporary, visible and invisible disability. And know that we're going to make mistakes. Right. But let's stage workshops on intercultural competency and sometimes involve our women and others who are of color, of minority sexual orientation, of difference, mm-hmm. of great and glorious human difference. And get ahead of the rest of your competition. As a result, Delta, Delta, Delta will get the best of the women candidates in all prospective membership pools because they are so savvy to it from the get-go.
You know, it's interesting. At our collegiate leadership conference back in February, we had a phenomenal panel of our collegiate advisory panel, and they talked about diversity and inclusion and how they address it, go about it in their chapters. And they, you know, when you have those conversations, they seem so beyond their years, and there's so much to learn from them as older generations, as they talk and they speak and they talk about their experiences. So the education is available, readily available from them. And if we listen, I think we'll get there.
I think listening is the most powerful cue, and to listen non-judgmentally and attentively, and their workshops to stage in chapters on how to be a great listener, which also then makes for great membership recruitment. But we want very much for each woman to celebrate her own distinctions in her difference. I think that a great growing example is that 24% of all women in America are going to be part of the Latinx community as soon as 2065. But the women in the Latinx community would want to remind us that one Latina is not like every other Latina.
Right.
I mean, there are racial and ethnic divisions. There are language divisions. Mm-hmm. Cubana Americana is very different than a Mexicana Americana. And a woman who is a Venezuelana is going to see the world differently than someone who's American but from Peru. And they want to be celebrated for those differences and are proud to be a member of Latinx, but they're proud of lots of other things and don't want to be called upon to represent the entire Latinx influence. They Right. want to be asked about their own individual opinions and to help get acquainted with the cultures, plural, and the celebrations. And I think that there are a few who understanding and kind, but or rather regretful, might be the best word, that the United States' best introduction to anything that involves Latinx seems to be Cinco de Mayo, and which isn't actually something that you would find celebrated by all the Latinx cultures. Right. And in addition, it's made to be essentially a great reason to imbibe a great deal of alcohol. And there are other cultural events and significant historical moments in which we could embrace Latinx. Yeah.
This has been terrific. There's so much here that we could keep digging into. I'm glad you're going to be here to help train our advisors and volunteers today. Thank you for your time. It's your birthday, so you've come to do this on your birthday. We are very appreciative of you joining us and letting us capture some of your wisdom.
Well, thank you very much. It is today, chronologically speaking, it is my 62nd birth date on Earth, but I still want to hang with my undergraduate collegians, so I feel very much at heart like I'm an 18 to 24-year-old.
You go.
And I hope that Delta 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 fraternity will continue to invite me back as long as I've got information that helps us stay on the cutting edge of what our organizations will need in the future. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
TriDelta is celebrating its annual Day of Giving on World Kindness Day, November 13th. Founded as a society that would be kind alike to all and that would assist our members in every possible way, our Day of Giving is a chance for TriDeltas everywhere to show their kindness and support for their sisters by giving to the TriDelta Foundation. We need your help to support all of the impactful work of the TriDelta Foundation, scholarships, need-based grants, and our empowering leadership and educational programming. So mark your calendars now for November 13th and encourage others to celebrate World Kindness Day on TriDelta's Day of Giving. One day, one gift, one sisterhood.
Welcome back to Let's Talk TriDelta. I'm so excited to have Megan Shaw James here today. She is a member of TriDelta's executive board and also serves on TriDelta's housing board, which is a really nice service of her to do double duty for TriDelta. She is a graduate of Millsaps College, an alum from our Gamma Zeta chapter there. She currently works in alumni engagement at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. So I'm excited to have her here today just for her perspective from TriDelta, but also being on a college campus. And I know you also work closely with the women at Millsaps. And so your perspective, I think, is going to be really helpful for us today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also want to mention, like me, you are raising Generation Z.
It is
you
true.
You are mom to Henry and Catherine. How old are they now?
So Henry just turned 8 and Catherine is 5.
Okay. So you're like me in this space where these children are growing up and they are in Generation Z. So I'm closely paying attention to all the information that comes out about them. What are some of your just initial observations from being on a campus and knowing about Generation Z? What are the things that are sort of top of mind for you?
Absolutely. And it is amazing how quickly things are changing with this generation. I think some things about them, we notice they are entrepreneurs. They have great ideas. You know, they don't have to have a storefront to sell things. They have the internet. They have all this technology. They can do that. So they have wonderful ideas. They are, on the most part, very well behaved. They're better educated. They're close with their families. And so they bring so much value to our chapters, to our organization. On the same side, why they may have these wonderful qualities, they are more depressed. They are more stressed. They have seen their parents go through job hardships, financial hardship. You know, we have a growing income gap and our middle class is shrinking. And that really has impacted not just their job outlook, but how their parents are responding to things. So they are coming with maybe some issues with previous generations. We didn't have to face that so earlier on. So they are have a bright outlook, but they're also cautious and I think realistic about what comes after college.
That's a lot to think about.
It's
some heavy stuff to think about for TriDelta. What do you think we can do to better support our chapters as these members come into our chapters?
Absolutely. I think there are so many things that we have as an organization that we can do and that our advisors can be doing, our alumni and the community. You know, some things that jump out to me, financial. Our chapters looking at our dues. What are we really doing as an organization to make sure that people can have access to our organization, being a dues paying member, and listeners, making sure we're hearing people where they are. I'm so proud of our mental health initiative that is coming out. You know, why so many students are coming with a diagnosed illness or disorder, many are not. But beyond that, what are we doing as women to support our every single day balance of our mental health? And so I'm excited about our initiative and having that conversation. And so we are equipping our women and our advisors to deal with that.
Changing that conversation from mental illness to what are we doing about our mental health? That it's a daily decision we all make to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge shift. And I'm so glad that we're making it.
And, you know, it's great for our collegiate members, but it's great for our alumni members because it is a remembrance of we need to be doing this every day. And so while we want to be role models and be helping our collegiate members, how are we doing this for ourselves as well?
Right. So speaking of our alumni, it's not just me and you that are parenting these Generation Z kids. What advice, what things have you taken that you use at home with your kids as you've learned about Generation Z?
Yes. You know, I think as parents, you want to love your children so much and you want to provide for them. But really, as parents, our jobs are to raise our children so they will leave us and they will be productive members of society. And so I think it is a balance of what stressors are we passing on to our children? You want to be open, have dialogue about what life is like. But what are the times where maybe they don't need to have all those conversations with them? You know, we have conversations, whether it's what's going on in the news, what's going on in politics. So often now we include our children in that and there's wonderful things, but realizing what kind of stressors are we passing on to our children. So that's something I'm definitely mindful of as a parent.
Right. As you share, I know I go through that a lot. Like, and we hear about things in Tri-Delta. We've had lots of incidences this year of things that we hoped hadn't happened in our chapters and not sharing those with the younger generation. But they have a lot on their plate. Kids are in a different place today than they were in the past. They deal with a lot more earlier, I think. So that's good advice, sort of caution around that as much as you can. So we're seeing the first Generation Z members graduate from Tri-Delta. We just graduated our first class from Generation Z. They are now members of our alumni, but they're also going out and getting jobs. To those of us who are supervising, hiring, working with these young alumni, whether it be in the workplace or in an alumni chapter, what do we need to know about working with them in a work environment?
Definitely. I think one of the great things about this generation is that they are team oriented. They want to be part of a group. They are willing to do these goals, but we need to let them know what is the purpose? What is the goal of the organization? What are we working towards? They want to know this information and they want to know how are they part of that as well. That's just more of a global kind of perspective, but I think salary negotiation, benefits negotiation, all those life skills, they want to know that as well. It's something I'm proud of Tri-Delta for doing that for our life after college series and giving them those real life experiences with all the things that we're doing for that. But I think as employers, we have to realize we have a great opportunity to really help this generation.
Yeah. They're goal oriented.
They are goal oriented. I think also
I've heard it said they need to know the why.
They need to know the why behind it. Where maybe in the past it's you go to your job. That's why. That's the why. It's to get the paycheck. It's to go forward doing it. But they want to see how they are part of it and what are they working toward.
Right. So one of the things that I think is so beautiful about Tri-Delta is that we are intergenerational. And when you step into an alumni chapter, you have the opportunity to be around someone who was there 40 years before you and somebody who came 10 years after you. And those relationships can be so life-giving and so affirming and just so fun. And so I'm wondering if what relationships you've had through the years that have been intergenerational in Tri-Delta and what you've gotten from those.
I think that is one of the biggest gifts I've received from Tri-Delta is all of the relationships I've had with people from every generation. I'll speak to my days when I traveled as a consultant and I stayed at the home of an alumni member who welcomed me, who she was initiated in the 1930s. She had every copy of the Trident since then, but she and I would have conversations about what was happening in the world. She would know the news. She would go to museums. And so it was wonderful to hear this perspective of so many years of knowledge of Tri-Delta, but also the world, but then also just to have those, you know, connections with Tri-Delta. And then afterwards, we maintained a relationship. We wrote letters to each other. We had phone calls. We had visits. And so I think where we are right now, that is wonderful. I think in-person connections are fantastic. We need to have those, you know, relationships. But also with technology, we're able to maintain things using social media, using so many of our platforms. And so that was one thing that stood out to me. Obviously, professionally, having a network of women all over the world to reach out to if you're deciding to transition from a job. What does that look like? What things should we be thinking about? So often we may be in one area in life, whether you had to change your market or change your position, knowing that you can call someone to ask for that recruiting advice or the benefits negotiation. That's been wonderful, too.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm excited about with Connect DDD is we've sort of given our women this platform.
Yes.
Where they can go and find each other in those times of need. I need a job. I need to know someone who does this. I need to learn about this. Or I'm in a new area. Who do I know here?
And for our alumni, you know, sometimes we do have time where we can be volunteers and we can commit that in person those hours, but sometimes we don't. But you can hop on to Connect DDD and you can review someone's resume or you can give that virtual advice. But going back to our mental health initiative too, maybe it's somebody needs advice on what podcast are you listening to that's helping to give you balance and hearing that from a Tri-Delta who's in that similar stage in life, you can find those things as well.
Yeah, it's almost like curated advice. We know the women who are here giving it and we trust them because we we share this bond mm-hmm. and these values. And so the information that comes through is more trusted.
Absolutely. And I have to say too, we talk, you know, professionally, the intergenerational, how important that is. But personally, the relationships that I've had as a parent, becoming a parent, being able to talk to previous board members, previous women who I've known, and seeing their children being born and now they are out of college, and being able to have that experience when you're, you know, dealing with a hardship, or maybe it's a child who has a learning disability or is facing something, being able to know that you can talk to someone and they can give advice for you. Right. And just knowing there are other women who are having those similar thoughts. And so you don't feel like you are in it alone. There are so many other women experiencing that right. as well.
That I think was the most powerful. We did this phenomenal video, which we'll put the link in our podcast on our mental health initiative. One of the women said, you know, as I started to talk about the challenges I was facing, I realized I was not alone. Other women were going through the same thing. And those just, I think those are powerful moments for us.
Absolutely.
So as we approach very quickly our 131st Founders Day, one of the things I think about when we talk about generations is how far back it goes. Mm-hmm. And I just want to pose the question, what does it mean to you to think back 131 years, women were sharing these same values and these same thoughts about promoting women and empowering women, and we're still part of it today and how lucky we are. But what does that really mean to you?
Absolutely. You know, in this today's world, we can feel like there's so much change going on and what is happening in the stress. But to know that 130 years ago, these women were brave, they were bold, and they were kind. And knowing that goes over through the years, it helps to keep make me have a focus and to feel reassured that we are doing the right thing. And it's so comforting. And I love to see how the organization has grown and we've done so many new ideas, but also to know we are still committed to those same values. It's just, I'm so grateful for TriDelta and her influence on so many generations of women.
Well, we are so grateful for you and your service on the board and for joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mindy.
That's our show, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Special thanks to our guests, Dr. Britt Katz and Megan James. Be sure to read more about Gen Z and all of the different generations represented in TriDelta in our upcoming issue of The Trident, available in print for all dues-paying members and to everyone else online at tridelta.org/trident. We hope you are loving listening to this podcast as much as we are loving bringing it to you. You can email us with ideas or questions or show ideas at podcast@trideltaeo.org. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk TriDelta. Tune in next time and bring you.